Welcome to the Cascadian Prophets Podcast, a production of the Cascadia Poetics Lab, empowering people to practice poetry and deepen connections to place, self, and the present moment.
We're here at the end of the IPRA 2023 conference, the International Peace Research Association, at the Hilton Trinidad Hotel and Conference Center. And we're here with Matt Meyer, who is the co-secretary general of IPRA. And it's a delight to be able to discuss this with you. And it was quite an experience this week. And for those who don't know what IPRA is, can you talk a bit about the history and the mission of the organization?
I can, but not without first saying what a delight it is to be here with you. You obviously have been here as a journalist and as a reporter, but also as a peacemaker. And it's been great having you here this week with us. So the International Peace Research Association is about a 70-plus year-old organization that was founded by mainly professors, scholars from an interdisciplinary set of fields, mainly the social sciences, historians, philosophers, sociologists, some folks out of the academy, but mainly that grouping of folk as the beginning of some courses in peace and the idea of some fields of studies that could be created into something, or maybe a field created called peace studies, began to be bandied about in several universities around, mainly again, North America, US, and Europe. But that group very quickly said, look, we want to be an international association, and we have different associates and friends at different, sometimes high levels of educational systems in the global south, especially in Latin America. And so IPRA was born and is now the world's largest consortium of peace researchers, professors, again interdisciplinary, students, community-based activists, cultural workers, etc. So it really is an amalgam. The emphasis is on academic work, usually at higher universities, but we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of one of our commissions, the Peace Education Commission, which tends to be about K-12 education and about the training of teachers who do that education. So that's Peace Education Commission. But we've had many different areas of work over the 75 years. And we're excited to be finishing up this conference in Trinidad, the first conference we've ever had in the Caribbean, and to be on what we think is a trajectory of great growth at a time when the world needs more peace and more justice.
Talk to us about your background in this field.
So I myself started out really almost moments before, but around the same time I left high school and started my undergraduate degree career as an activist. I was of that generation in 79-80 when President Jimmy Carter asked 18-year-olds, or asked young men when we turned 18 to register for the draft. I was one of those who publicly refused. But because I was from New York and they were really trying to de-emphasize prosecution of people from big cities, especially big progressive cities, I was never indicted. I never did any time. And yet that was a great conscientiousizing process for me. Also in my undergraduate years, especially after 2 years of organizing and doing peace work and anti-draft work, it became clear to me that the global peace movement, which I had one major interaction with, I went to a global peace conference in 1982, I was quite young, but it occurred to me at that conference and in other settings that the connections between the international peace movement with huge parts of the world, mainly Latin America, Africa, Asia Pacific, the global south so-called, that this was missing, and that many, many groups that called themselves international were really 7 or 8 or 10 countries from Europe and a couple of people in the US, and that was international. So when I began to know more and get known more in the peace studies field, the first thing that impressed me is that was more or less not the case. That here you had a network that both structurally, in terms of the elected officials onto our council, but also thematically and politically had significant numbers of scholars and activists from all of those regions I just mentioned. So we had a truly international grouping of folks from every corner of the world, every continent, looking at how to make the world a better place, essentially.
Tell us about the purpose of this conference and conferences like it that happen every other year.
Well, it's useful, we found, as a network to come together. And academics are very busy, and each of the regional associations, we are mainly made up of five autonomous but interconnected regional associations, as I say, Asia Pacific, Africa, Europe, Latin America, and North America. And so coming together in person just sparks. Like, we always have a call for papers and papers presented, but the fact of the matter is papers just in a used to be physical journal, and now most journals are online, cannot substitute for the dynamism of presenting your paper in front of other people and having interactive conversation, making it better, building it, getting different perspectives, and that's what happens in person. This particular conference in Trinidad, the 29th biennial IPRA conference, had as its theme Rooted Futures, and we were looking at the Sankofa, the African Sankofa image, many Trinidadian images, the idea of you look back on history in order to look forward, that they're indelibly connected, but it's not just learning from history. It's really this sort of, and the Sankofa bird and the Ghanaian Akan culture sort of has this long twisted neck. You're looking back in order to look forward. And that was, I think, the overriding theme of this conference. We also knew that in Trinidad, you had these great intellectuals, these giants, who were also profound internationalists, Pan-Africanists, Pan-Americans, people like C.L.R. James, George Padmore, who was, you know, this iconic figure. The independence movement in Africa of the 50s, 60s, and 70s would not have gotten off the ground without George Padmore. Someone like Kwame Ture Stokely Carmichael, who was obviously the leader of the black student movement in the U.S. with the popularizers of the phrase black power. He's born here. I visited his birth house just down the road. People like Claudia Jones. You have this rich history of radical thought and action here in Trinidad that we could build upon. So we're really here to build our network out into the Caribbean, where we haven't been so much, to bring a Pan-African, Pan-American perspective together, and to look at how we can build better for 21st century peace studies.
Franz Fanon, another intellectual who's been referenced a couple of times here, at least from the Caribbean, at least. Talk to us about how this conference came to be in Trinidad.
So I want to say first that I think Franz Fanon definitely was influential all over the Caribbean. He was from French-speaking Caribbean. That's unquestionable. Everywhere in the world there's Fanon, you know, people who read from, respected, and followed some of his writings. I think there's a little extra edge in that because one of our honored guests and presented was none other than Marais Fanon Mendez Friends, the director and president of the Franz Fanon Foundation, a significant human rights activist, someone who's been the chair of the UN International African Working Group. I always mess that name up. It's something like the Working Group on People of African Descent. I think that's more correct. In any case, Marais is a key person, and also Franz Fanon's daughter. So I think people have been super conscious about the role Fanon played in them because Marais was here with us this week. It's also a tradition within IPRA, not a constitutional imperative, but a tradition, that the secretary generals will lead the conferences in their country or in their region. For example, my co-secretary general in the past, the last couple of years, has been a woman named Christina Tieno, who's based in Nairobi, Kenya. It was sad and difficult, but her conference came up in the middle of COVID. She did a valiant job doing as best as she could. We did a lot of it online, of course. But then the next conference would fall to me, and I said early on, I'm not going to do a conference in the U.S. Though that's where I was born and bred. I'm a Brooklyn, New York boy. The fact of the matter is that no matter who's in the White House, control that we have over visas based on what people say, no. It's too much control and too likely that too many of the key people we wanted here would be denied visas. We've seen it time and time again. So I thought about where might be good, and I have a dear friend, Dr. Hakeem Williams of Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania. And we were like, you know, I know that you're Trinidadian American, that you have these roots in Trinidad as well. What do you think? Could we do it? Who could we get to do it? How do we manipulate it in terms of... Anyway, all of those questions. And 3 years ago, Hakeem and I looked at each other and said, it's like a good idea, sounds like a good idea. And then we built a team. And a lot of that team was some amazing Trinidadian activists here, Angelique Nixon, Matilda Springer, and others.
And the Wilshires.
Of course, absolutely, absolutely. So we have this community of people. And most of these people I'd never met once. I met them a week ago, and they feel like absolute family now. Akila Jumoji, you know, who runs the reforestation project here and is the leader of the American and Maroon communities. The fact is, it's been 2 years of bridging communities here with other communities here, some of the international activists and leaders that are part of IPRA into that whole conversation with the local. And we had what we called international co-chairs, Hakeem and myself, local co-chairs, Attila and Angelique, and this vibrant committee to figure out what we could do, which nights, to both learn from Trinidadian culture, give our papers, and have a space where we could talk about things where we both felt like the government of Trinidad would let many, many people with different kinds of passports in, and they did, and we could have a frank conversation about the future.
There's a strong Reiki component at this conference. How did that happen to be?
So that was completely, I mean, I don't believe in coincidences, but when we set forward, Hakeem and myself, IPRA as a whole, and then the local committee, we had no thought of a Reiki component. It was not organic to our thinking about this work. But the fact is that a group of Reiki practitioners from the area, both Trinidad and the region, reached out to us because of friends kind of thing. And basically, they said, look, we often have Reiki conferences around this time. We've heard about this peace conference you're doing. Is there a way you think we could put things into each other? And, well, a couple of things about that. First, a number of us in the leadership of IPRA have been thinking that even though we are still absolutely focused on these so-called hard sciences, healing, spiritual, the connection between spiritual and political, health and human rights, that all of these issues connect so perfectly and so closely with what we do, that it could be a very nice intersection, a nice bridge that we build. Also, unbeknownst to practically everyone, I practiced Reiki and was ultimately raised to a second level Reiki practitioner. I never got to master's level because I was doing too many other things. But I have this Reiki background that no one knew about. So I was like, I think this is meant to be. I think this is the direction we should go. And it has been a lovely direction. It's been a lovely direction. And I think I think they wouldn't have gotten the politics doing their regular thing. And we wouldn't have gotten not just a bunch of free Reiki treatments in the morning, which wasn't a bad thing. I took advantage of that. But also a real consciousness connection about mental health, physical health, self-healing. I mean, Reiki is one of the gentlest and easiest forms of self-help and health and healing that you can do on yourself. You can do Reiki on yourself. So I was really pleased, and it brought me back to some earlier times when Reiki was more of an essential element in my life.
It's probably a good thing you didn't tell people that you did Reiki, because they would have signed you up to be treating people there in the morning in the foyer.
I think no one had any illusions about my time ability to like, you know, oh yeah, I have a free slot to do Reiki at 2:30 in the morning. If you want to come up, we'll work it out.
It's been an amazing conference. It's my first IPRA. I hope to come to future ones. I'd like to know where the next one is going to be held, and I think I signed up for a mailing list. There are many directions that we could talk about, the history, the racial composition in Trinidad, which is fascinating. There are elements of Africa and India and, of course, South America. It's my understanding that these islands were once connected to South America many, many, many years ago. One question I had was, maybe you could talk briefly about the working relationship that you have with the IPRA Foundation, because the foundation, actually there was a workshop yesterday in which the grant application process was discussed for aspiring peace scholars. Here's an opportunity to have some costs covered and to perhaps do some original work in the field of peace studies.
So I first want to play with your tease. I want to tease, I want to see your tease and raise your tease. It has been a question, and an appropriate question, one we couldn't answer as loudly as we'd like to. But I can now tell you, since the conference is over, and we had a new council meeting, and I was re-elected Secretary General for another 2 years, it's term limited, this is my last 2 years, I can now tell you where we are looking to have the next conference.
The big reveal right now.
The big reveal. This is the first time in public, literally. So it's hard when you have a conference like this, where last night we heard from a distinguished Bolivarian, Bolivia's government minister, who was an indigenous woman and a healer.
Vivian Camacho.
Vivian Camacho, an amazing, amazing speech. And to have the opening ceremonies we did some days ago with, Santa Rosa people's chief and indigenous leaders, and just have this stream of sort of depth about people and elders and spirituality and the land and the politics and the academic work, all interconnected. How do you top that?
That's a good question.
Here's my answer. The newly elected chair, or co-secretary general, rather, of our Asia Pacific Regional Association, the Asia Pacific Peace Research Association, Kelly T. Mahora, is a Maori scholar, PhD, very distinguished indigenous scholar and activist who talks about the peaceful warrior and about Maori peacemaking, which is actually part of her heritage, her grandfather, etc. Well, we are hoping and we are thinking sometime late, maybe November, December of 2025, just a little bit over 2 years from now, of having the first conference, the first international peace conference to be held on indigenous land in Maori country in New Zealand. That's the idea.
Fantastic.
So yes, there's a process. Kelly and I were tasked by the council meeting this afternoon to look at the logistical and fiscal and other possibilities. I think there's a great deal of excitement. I think we're going to come back in the next conference, the next council meeting, which I think is in August. We're going to have the concrete proposal then by then, and I think it's going to be a shoo-in. I think people are very excited about it. So yeah, a lot of work, but we're not afraid of work. We want to do work that's impactful, that's meaningful.
You alluded to indigenous ceremonies. It was a very powerful one to end the conference. It happened at a restoration site, a reforestation project. The Fondas Amandas watershed,
yes,
is where we were. As a person who's hosting a podcast called Cascadian Prophets, obviously bioregionalism is very close to my heart. The fact that we're talking about watersheds, to me, is a key to peace and to restoring the biosphere, one bioregion, one watershed at a time.
Yes.
Can you talk to us in
yes.
your mind about the connection between bioregionalism and peace?
Well, I'm now, I have to say, getting a little bit exhausted, and that feels like a very big topic, but it's to say, at least, that we have a clear and sharp understanding that the climate crisis, as it's been called, that questions as some groups like Extinction Rebellion call, you know, really crisis level. And I think we do have a crisis. And it's like the war that isn't in your face and acute, but that's drifting and drifting and drifting for years, and you turn around, and more people were killed in this dirty little Ukrainian war than all of, you know, 10. It's just, it begins to become an issue between what violence and actual devastation we do. Direct war absolutely does it, that's clear. But a lot of death has occurred, a lot of poverty and injustice has occurred by the climate crisis and the lack of a biodiverse sort of understanding of how to build and rebuild our structures. So yes, to me, it's a key component. It's a key piece to ask and answer and look at. And some Native peoples and Native cultures have looked at it more carefully than I think many mainstream white academics, for example.
A real pleasure to have your time. Thank you for your good work. Continued success.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to be with you.
Cascadian Prophet supporters include Diana Elser, a sponsorship dedicated to her parents whose practicality, humor, and love of family life reflected their experience in and love for the Eastern Missouri Breaks and Western Ruby Valley, Montana landscapes that define their childhoods. And Steinbrook Native Gallery, located near Pike Place Market in downtown Seattle, featuring fine art of the Northwest Coast from emerging and established artists. A link to their site at CascadianProfits.org.